Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Kunja Bihari. Gopijana Balabha Girivada Dhari. Girivada Dhari. Gopijana Balabha Girivada Dhari. Jasoda Nandana Prajajana Dandana Jasoda Nandana Prajajana Dandana Jamana Tiravana Chadi Jamana Tiravana Chadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivada Dhari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivada Dhari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivada Dhari Gopijana Balabha Girivada Dhari Jasoda Nandana Prajajana Dandana Jasoda Nandana Prajajana Dandana Jamuna Tiravana Chadi Jamuna Tiravana Chadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Hari Vedaka Charaja Astatara Satasi Srimad His Divine Grace Sri Bhakti Vedanta Ananta Koti Vaishnavarindaki Grantarad Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Gorpimanandi. What I'd like to do this morning is a little different than what's on the board because I have, I'd like to read text 8 because we didn't cover it. This could stay on the board for tomorrow. So if you have your little handheld device, you can find Canto 10, Chapter 28, text number. 8.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This verse, text 8 from chapter 28, this is the last of Varuna's prayer. And the series carries on. Mama Pyanugraham Krishna Kartum Arhasi Asheshadrik Govinda Niyatam Esha Pitate Pitravatsala Mamam Yanugraham Krishna Kartum Arhas Yashesha Drik Govinda Niyatam Esha Pitate Pitravatsala Mamapyanugraham Krishna Kartum Arhasya Shesha Drik Govinda Niyatam Esha Pitate Pitravatsala Mamapanugraham Krishna Kartum arhasya shesha drik Govinda niyatam esha Pitate pitravatsala Mama To me Api Even Anugraham Mercy Krishna O Lord Krishna Kartum arhasi, please do, ashesha, of everything, drik, of you who see, Govinda, niyatam, may he be taken, eshaha, this, pitta, Father, te, your, pitra vatsala, oh, you are most affectionate to your parents. Translation, oh, Krishna, oh, seer of everything. That's Asheshadrik. Please give your mercy even to me, oh, Govinda. You are most affectionate to your father. Please take him home. So he's used three addresses, Krishna, Asheshadrik, and Govinda. Jiva Goswami writes, taking Krishna to his house, Varuna showed Krishna, his father. He addressed Krishna as Govinda. Quote, you were most merciful in accepting the bathing ceremony as Govinda by Indra a great offender. Oh, Krishna, affectionate to your father. By saying this, Varuna satisfies both Krishna and Nanda. This also indicates, quote, I recognized him as your father and kept him here in hope that I would have the good fortune of your coming. So we have at least three different versions of why this whole thing happened to begin with. Sanatana Goswami writes, seeing that the Lord was internally angry, Varuna became afraid and pacified him by showing Nanda. Listen to this. Govinda means he who enjoys Swarga as Indra. So Indra is the king of heaven. Indra is a title, a position, and Indra has the position of king of heaven. But Krishna is the king of heaven. He's the king of everything. This is Sanatana Goswami indicating why he's calling Krishna Govinda. Thus, Krishna is Varuna's master. Though he was an offender, Krishna would be merciful, just as he had accepted Abhishek from Indra as Govinda. That's another reason for calling the word Govinda. Here's your father just in front. Therefore, do not be angry. Since you are devoted to your father, take him and go. Paragraph. He is suitable as your father since you are Govinda. Oh, Lord, affectionate to your father, please take him home quickly since the time of breaking the fast is almost over. Remember, it was 6 hours. And it was still, the sun hadn't come up yet. So they're going to get back before the sun comes up. You'll see. There is a deep meaning to the phrase, quote, affectionate to your father. And here's the meaning. Because Krishna had affection for his father, Krishna should come to Varuna's place for his father. Then, in his house, Varuna could see him and worship him freely, thinking in this way, Varuna had brought Nanda here and put him in his house with devotion. My wish has been fulfilled. Now you may take him. So there's different versions. You know, the servant was a demon, or the servant was not having proper understanding of the rules of fasting, not fasting, etc. That's one version. So he made a big offense, and Varuna was taking it as his offense because his servant made the offense. Then there's another version that the servant was doing the bidding of Varuna, who had Nanda brought. So that's what Sanatana says. Thinking in this way, Varuna had brought Nanda here and put him in his house. So twice the servant is given some bad names. Here, at least it's being said, it was deliberate. Then there's a third that says, the mistake was made, but why didn't he return him when he recognized this is Nanda? The servant didn't. Well, he kept him because he thought Krishna would come, because he's affectionate to his father. So whatever the psychology and motivation, there's different versions. And I'm going to read briefly from Gopal Champu. Now, Gopal Champu is one of the writings of Jiva Goswami. Champu is a particular K category of literature that has certain rules. And so he wrote Gopal Champu. He wrote about Gopal, particularly Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, using a particular literary style called the Champu. So that's what it is. It's a retelling of Krishna's pastimes in a literary style. He really liked Srimad Bhagavatam, and he really liked Krishna, and he was very gifted in explaining, describing Krishna in different ways. So here we go. Chapter 20 of Gopal Champu. The Lord of the water covered the path to where Nanda was with his best cloth for Krishna's feet. He brought Krishna, the chief among the best of the cowherds, to that place and said, "Oh, Govinda, affectionate to your father, please take your father. Your father is the object of my worship. I understand who he is. How can I treat him badly? How can he be defeated by any other person?" Krishna freed Varuna from fear of being bound up by exerting his influence. Not seeing Krishna with his eyes, but sensing him by his fragrance, Nanda regained consciousness to the astonishment of the assembled persons. The meditation on Narayana, which began with his bath in the Jamuna, was now broken. Opening his eyes, he saw Krishna. Immediately his eyes filled with tears. He thought he was still dreaming because of his flow of tears. Krishna touched his feet, raised him up, and embraced him. "Oh, Father, I have come." In this way, he brought him to his senses. Though they both were intensely emotional, fearing that they would be the joke of the all-pervading Varuna's followers, to control their hearts and dissipate their tears, Krishna spoke, "Oh, Father, you have been confined here." Nanda looked around. "Where are we?" He looked at the face of his son in astonishment. Krishna said, "Oh, Father, do not do anything else. Just as I have come here, we will return to Vraja. Get ready to put your lotus feet in that direction." When they were about to leave, Varuna spoke with piteous words, "Oh, Krishna, you are compassionate. Please either punish me or show me mercy, but do not let my offense remain. Offense will not cease without punishment or mercy." As the two of them were leaving, they stood there for a moment. Varuna offered various gifts at their feet and paid his respects. He accompanied them to the edge of the hole. Now, still, this hole is a mystery. When they came to the hole, he, Varuna, made the water part for them. He gave to those assigned to take Krishna and Nanda to Braja the best ornaments and cloth, and feeling momentary joy, returned to his abode dancing while thinking himself successful. During this time, the people of Braja remained lifeless on the bank of the river, waiting for Nanda and Krishna to appear again. They had slight symptoms of life, but when they saw the two returning with Varuna's servants, they fainted in bliss. Jiva Goswami is known for his scholarship, precision, didactic capacities to take something and divide it into 1,000 little pieces and show them and assemble them together and do it again and do it again. He's super intellectual. I mean, the reading of his commentary is like that. But he had many other qualities. This shows one of them. It's so sweet. It's really like, wow. He was very expert in deity worship. The deity that he worshipped is the celebrated Radha Damodar at the Radha Damodar temple. That Radha Damodar deity was given to him by Rupa Goswami. It is said that Rupa Goswami carved the deity himself, and Jiva Goswami was instructed by Rupa Goswami and Gopal Bhatta Goswami in the art of deity worship, and he worshipped with great love. This isn't so much spoken about him, but he worshipped with great love, so much so that when he was doing his worship, sometimes Gopal would dance, Radha Damodar would dance, and he would sing, and they were like very intimate in the worship of Radha Damodar. Another is, he was the host, in part because he was younger, but also in part because the physical location of the Radha Damodar temple was kind of central for the Goswamis. So the Goswamis would come together. When I first went to the Radha Damodar temple, some of you perhaps have circumambulated around the deity. You go around the samadhis on the left side and around the back of the altar of Radha Damodar and around the other side where the samadhis of the Goswamis, Bhajan Kutir, Rupa Goswami, etc., Bhargava Goswami. So, when I went there, it's different today. When I went there, there was this platform, and beneath the platform there was kind of like a cool area, because the summers in Vrindavan get really hot, unbearably hot for some of us. And so Jiva Goswami had figured this out. It was a big stone slab. Now it's not there. And they would huddle underneath the stone slab. This is what we were told by Gurudas, who was told this by Prabhupada. And so they would come together on a regular basis and discuss Krishna Katha at the Radha Damodar temple. So he was the host of many for Krishna Katha sessions. Who can only imagine what that was like? And, of course, he understood the significance of the writings of the Goswamis, and so he had brahmanas engaged in copying them by hand, and he kept a library of the Goswami literature and had other copies also made, but that library is now part of what's forget what it's called, Institute something. It's a library of the writings of the Goswamis in the original handwriting. And of course, the distribution of those literatures, that's another great accomplishment of Jiva Goswami. starting the Sankirtan book distribution effort. He trained the next great acharyas. That's a great accomplishment. He had the foresight. It's still technical, but during his during the time of the six Goswamis, and then he was the among the youngest of the leaders in Braja, there was concern, he had concern about the preservation of these wonderful properties going forward in time because of Muslim rule and, you know, people being taking advantage when nobody's looking to try to take over something that's of value. So he went through the trouble of creating deeds for all the properties, you know, property protection going forward in time. And it's in part for that reason, because they were submitted to the Muslim ruler at the time, that they didn't have to, he could do whatever the heck he wanted, but they were honored. Like, and he was the successor acharya, which means many people came to him for many things, for training, for answering questions, for you name it. The primary acharya following Rupa and Sanatana Goswami for the next generation, and then ensured that the next generation would be prepared to carry forward Lord Chaitanya's movement intact. I mean, what a luminary. Many, many, many faceted capacities. But the best known of Jiva Goswami's contributions is his writing. And best known amongst his writings is the Sandarbhas. But here we have the Sandarbhas is, in one sense, it's many things, but it's a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. But so is Gopal Chambu. But what a unique style of commentary, so contrastingly different from the Sandarbhas. It's just lovely. And he had other writings that were like that. They're just not heavy philosophy and parsing points into little fine pieces and putting them back together again. Just wonderful lila and fascinating descriptions of the wonderful lila. So I wanted to cover this. Although the BBT doesn't have commentary, this is very nice commentary. And I also wanted to end with, this is the last of Varuna's words. It seems, I mean, I haven't seen it explicitly stated, but amongst the devas, Indra's top, and then commonly right after Indra is Varuna. Now we know that according to the Vedic texts, each time there's a change of manus, there's a change of who occupies the posts of the principal demigods, and someone is appointed and signed that service by Manu, the next Manu. And of course the power to do all those things come from one place, the personality of Godhead. So Varuna post is vacated after some time and someone else occupies the post. But we discussed this a little bit, and I can't explain it more than what we just read. This abode keeps using his house, which I guess means a palace, but his house, his residence, is in a certain place that one can access through a hole. And to get back to Vraja, they went to the edge of the hole, and Vruna parted water, doesn't explain anything. And so his assistants took him back to Vraja. And they revived. They were about to die, and when they saw Krishna and Nanda, they fainted. So it gives an idea of the intensity of emotion in Vraja. And you know that we celebrate it, but if you think about it with material vision, I don't know if I want to be there, because look at all these intense emotions they have to go through. And you become so attached to Nanda and Krishna, they can barely maintain their lives. It's not just like, you know, anything we endure. Nothing like it. Nothing like it. I mean, whatever you want to think of, nothing like it. Can't maintain their lives. Not like you're... So, you know, devotees have problems keeping their minds settled when they're chanting because they're disturbed by something or other. Somebody said something mean to them. Or whatever. Or whatever. Or whatever. And, you know, they can't think straight. They can't concentrate on their japa. Imagine about Vraja. They can barely maintain their lives. Their emotion is so high. And then when they see Krishna and Nanda return, they faint. But, you know, that's the material picture is, forget it. I don't want to go through those emotions. I have a hard enough time as it is with my little ones. And the spiritual picture is these are symptoms of ecstasy. We've been reading about it, this bhava and that bhava and the other bhava of different kinds, and Krishna's pastimes stimulate them. Many things, so visiting, Krishna wanted to visit Varuna. So Krishna's in the heart of everyone, including Varuna, and Krishna stimulated Varuna to do what he did, or the servant of Varuna to do what his servant of Varuna did. And then Krishna came angry, and Varuna was like, uh-oh, he's angry. I'd better show him where his father is real fast and let him know you're affectionate to your father. I've been worshiping your father. So he's safe, he's protected, he's respected. And then we hear Nanda not being able to see Krishna was in something of a faint, and Krishna revived him from that position and touched his feet and offered his respects and said just the sound of his voice revived him. He came again to external consciousness now that he could see. So the intensity of these emotions are most amazing, and it's all focused on Krishna in different moods of love, different rasas, different tastes, different mellows. And what is Krishna feeling? He's feeling their love, and he's reciprocating with, you know, you can describe it in both directions, in other words. What they're feeling towards Krishna is what's Krishna feeling towards them. And our acharyas want us to know it's not just that, you know, the living entities or his devotees, he's just like sussing out or assessing where their feelings are, and then he's reciprocating and inspiring and churning their feelings. He's doing that. but at the same time, he's enjoying and he's experiencing from his side. I mean, in other words, his divinity is always there, his omniscience is always there, but he's also enjoying tastes. He has feelings in reciprocation with their feelings. And we're going to hear tomorrow this one. When he gets back, it's the sun hasn't come up yet. The Dwadasi has not yet begun. So they have to hurry up and... because it was just bathing. He didn't take, you know, grains. But so they're going to get together and have a little festival and have some sweet rice. They follow the codes of the Vedas. Although they're on this prema platform, not just spontaneous, they're on the prema platform and they still follow these, they follow them carefully. In the midst of all of their transcendental emotion and connectivity with Krishna. It's really an amazing picture. What's it like in the spiritual world? We're getting such a up-close picture of what it's like in the spiritual world. What it's like at the topmost place of the spiritual world. In the evening sessions, I went through this exercise of reading. The Kumaras go to the gates of Vaikuntha. What's the kingdom of God like? And then we read, going to Ayodhya, Gopal Kumar went to Vaikuntha. He not only went to the gate, he went into Vaikuntha, and he experienced so many things. And then he was taken to Ayodhya. And that's different than Vaikuntha. I mean, what do we know about reality? The world, the kingdom of Maya is very dark and filled with misery. And anyway, it's without going there so much. The notion that sense gratification is happiness is part of Maya. It's not what happiness is. It covers what happiness is, that so-called happiness that then very quickly turns into misery. And the misery is forgetting our real happiness in the name of happiness. But what's the kingdom of God like, and what's it like to be with Krishna? It's a really good travel advertisement. It's fantastic marketing. Let's go. All aboard. And it's through sound we can be transported. The potency is there to be transported. And then there's some, you know, work on our side to be qualified to receive that sound properly. I'm going to end with just reading, as I did last night. Somebody sent me Sanatan Goswami wrote 417 prayers to Srimad Bhagavatam. He liked Srimad Bhagavatam. He loved Srimad Bhagavatam. And I'm going to read to you five of them. The last five. And then we'll end. Oh, Srimad Bhagavatam, O nectar churned from the ocean of all Vedic scriptures. Oh, most prominent transcendental fruit of all the Vedas. Oh, you who are enriched with the jewels of all spiritual philosophical conclusions. Oh, you who grant spiritual vision to all the people of the world. Oh, life breath of the Vaishnava devotees. Oh, Lord, you are the sun which has arisen to dispel the darkness of the Kali Yuga. You are actually Krishna, who has returned among us. O Srimad Bhagavatam, I offer respectful obeisances unto you. By reading you, one attains transcendental bliss, for your syllables rain pure love of God upon the reader. You are always to be served by everyone, for you are an incarnation of Krishna. O Srimad Bhagavatam, my only friend, O my companion, O my teacher, O my great wealth, O my deliverer, O my good fortune, O my bliss, I offer respectful obeisances unto you. One more, and we're done. O Srimad Bhagavatam, O giver of saintliness to the unsaintly, O uplifter of the very fallen, please do not ever leave me. Please become manifested upon my heart and my throat, accompanied by pure love of Krishna.
Yeah, it's related directly to today's class, but something from previous class.
Okay.
Maharaj, a lot of times Srila Prabhupada would entertain challenges of his disciples in a preaching spirit. He would have them take the role of a scientist or a Mayavadi and then defeat them.
Yeah.
So in terms of the class, we covered that verse, Namo Tubhyam Bhagavate Brahmane Paramatmane. We had that discussion on Brahman.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could help defeat certain arguments that many people have, and sometimes reaching out, especially the newer generation, in regards to Brahman. And that generally goes, well, I have realized, you know, this oneness, this Brahman. I've realized this is God, this is the absolute truth. So I don't need your books. I don't need this from my own self. I've realized God. So how we can kind of disassemble these...
It depends on the person. A very natural place to go, with depends on the person, is Shukadeva Goswami. Then another one is, you know, you say you've realized God, that it's all one, and then challenge as Prabhupada would challenge. If it's all one, then give me all your money. Or if it's all one, why are you wearing a shirt instead of a cotton ball? It's all one. In other words, it's a philosophy that we don't live by, one who says, I realize God, so do you live by that? Let's test it. There are, you know, then historically, like Bilba Mangala Thakur, there are persons that had that experience, and they, by the sweetness of the non-dual personality, they left that behind and became absorbed in ecstasy. No, you're contented with this. And what's on the other side of this? Is there anything on the other side of this? Those are different, depending upon the person and their disposition. Largely, it's a bluff. I mean, there may be some contentment or whatever, whatever you might want to call it, a hallucinated or a mode of goodness or an imagined or a pretentious contentment. You know, but let's see what happens when someone kicks them in the shins or whatever. So there are different ways of helping a person take a look at in a detached looking at what they're saying is their situation and what are some other options. Are there other options? Or, you know, just scriptural references. Persons who achieve that again fall down because. Ruya Krishchaina. Depends on the person. Most people, I would guess, most of those people would be like born-again Christians. They just come back to like, I'm satisfied, leave me alone.
Hmm.
But if that depends.
Yeah, the angle I usually begin with is the acceptance of some authority and introducing the acceptance of an authority in the Shastra, that we can have so many different experiences, but we need some guide in terms of how to make sense of. But they're very hesitant, reluctant to accept any this system of authority, which makes it difficult to teach about a higher concept.
I heard what you're saying in a slightly different way from someone that's a freshman in college. And they're finding that the new religion today is like this. No scripture, you know, it's my experience. The new religion, this is their words, is my experience is everything. And I don't require anything to give me an experience. My experience is everything. You know, like, you know, wisdom literature or authority or anything or anything. You know, the authority of disciplic succession. You know, it's just not, that's not fit within my religion. My religion is my experience. And really, you know, believe in it and stuck in it, and unless it's their experience. So their question was similar to yours. How do you help a person that's got that perspective? Go the next step or go anywhere other than I just have to verify this with my experience. Okay, let's experience. I'll hold your hand. Let's go. See if it's a nice experience. And I guess so. It depends on the mindset of the people, the individual. Okay, so we're going to end. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.